Well, good morning. My name is Ben. For those of us who haven't had the privilege of meeting before, and like Josh said just a few minutes ago, we are so incredibly excited that each and every one of you are here with us this morning. Whether you're here in person, checking us out online, here for the very first time, or back for the 100th time, we want you to know that every single weekend around here, we count ourselves privileged that you've taken a chance on us and carved out an hour of your weekend to spend it alongside of us. And today we find ourselves excited that you're here as we dive into part two in this series that we're calling Find Your People, Love Your Neighbor. A series that's designed to lean into this concept that we believe with all of our hearts, every single one of us was designed to have in our lives. And yet, for most of us in this room, we find ourselves resisting at every turn. A concept that in every single one of our lives that may be uncomfortable in the short term, but pays incredible dividends in the long term. You see, what we believe is that for every single one of us, regardless of what stage of life you find yourself in, what circumstances you find yourself walking through, what socioeconomic status you're in, there is something that all of us have in common that deep inside of us, not only do we crave, but we need to be successful in life on this earth. As I think about the things in our life that we have in common, it immediately reminds me that for every single one of us in this room, there are a whole lot of things that are different about us. You see, your life, your story is vastly different from mine. The reality is the circumstances that you're walking through may be vastly different than mine. And for all of us in this room, our personalities are all slightly different. And yet there's this one thing that every single one of us have in common. This one thing that we've all walked through together. You see, 4 years ago in March of 2020, none of us could have guessed how much our lives and our world would be flipped upside down. As we embarked on this journey through COVID, what all of us would attest to is this, right? That's a stage of life that we would never choose to go back to. And yet with that exact same sentiment, when we look close enough and get honest enough, I think what we'd be forced to admit as well is that there were also some really good things that came out of that season and some of those quarantines. One of those is this, curbside groceries, y'all. At the time that COVID hit in my life and in my family, my kids were 2 and 3 years old. And for those of you who have been there before, what you know is that strolls down the Walmart aisles are not pleasurable ones when you have 2 and 3 year olds, whether they're in your cart or attached to your side. And you're telling me that I no longer have to take my toddlers down the cookie aisle or into the checkout line? Sign me up. And y'all, for 4 years now, I have not taken my toddlers into Walmart to go grocery shopping. On top of that, as we headed into COVID, pre-kids for Krista and I, and maybe some of you can relate, Friday night was our night. It was our night to splurge. Every other night of the week, we were doing, right, spaghetti and tacos and peanut butter and jelly to save money. But Friday was the one night of the week in which we went out and we had dinner together. And then kids came along, and it seemed like those opportunities to do date nights went out the window, and even those opportunities to go out to eat when my nightmares joined us in restaurants at 1, 2, and 3 years old, right? Y'all have been there, and it's like we're not enduring that for any amount of money. And then came COVID and the family to-go meals. And for our family, it was an opportunity on Friday night at places like Cheddar's and Logan's and Texas Roadhouse for us to do a family to-go meal for like $24.99 and still have a piece of being able to eat out without taking our nightmares out with us at that time. There was one other thing that I've never personally experienced, but that has grown in immense popularity, and maybe you don't want to admit that you've experienced this or become accustomed to this, but many people around the United States have seen this as an incredible benefit. You see, as we progressed through COVID, things like cleanliness rose to the surface in a desire for many of us. And when you couple this desire for cleanliness with also a shortage of toilet paper, what you get is the rise in popularity of the bidet. Do you realize that in the United States in 2019, the bidet accounted for $8 million in sales? In 2020, the bidet accounted for $40 million in sales in the United States. And with each progressive year past 2020, sales of the bidet have risen by between 20 to 30%. When you do the quick math, what you'll quickly realize is this, that in 2024, sales of the bidet are projected to be at around $90 million. That means the popularity of the bidet has grown tenfold as we've come through the pandemic. The only time I had ever seen a bidet in my life, and this is going to seem crazy, is we went on a missions trip to Guatemala. And in a guest house that we stayed in one of the bathrooms, there was a bidet there. And on this particular trip, we had a whole group of high school guys that were with us. And y'all, you can just imagine, right, that they had a heyday with this bidet and that they were absolutely enthralled with this thing. But we had never really seen one before. We had never experienced one before. A cousin of ours just had a child just a few weeks ago. And so my wife and my oldest went to visit them and to see the baby for the first time. One afternoon, there were screams of horror coming from the bathroom from my oldest. And Krista walked into the bathroom, and she was immediately furious because she just thought that our seven-year-old had peed all over himself and all over the bathroom floor. And as she was about to begin yelling at him, through his tears, he cried, "The potty is spraying water at me!" And there he had been clicking the button for the bidet, and the bidet was just spraying water all over everything in the bathroom. You see, there were some things that we gained through COVID and through the quarantines in our life. Well, we can also acknowledge that there's one major thing that COVID and the pandemic has taken from us. It's continued to accentuate this belief in all of us that we are capable of doing life on our own. The COVID and the quarantines for many of us have sent us scrambling into our corners, and for some of us, we have not yet emerged from that corner. That we find ourselves still believing that life is best done alone and that life is most comfortable when done alone. But just last year, the Surgeon General of the United States issued an 80-page advisory. And within this 80-page advisory, it centered on the belief that there was one thing within our world and with our country that posed the greatest threat to both our physical and mental health. Within this 80-page advisory, this thing that the Surgeon General wrote about was more detrimental to our physical and mental health than diabetes, obesity, and smoking 14 cigarettes a day. The central topic of this 80-page advisory was loneliness. But the greatest threat to our lives, both physically and mentally as human beings, is the lacking of connection with another human being. But that is the thing within our lives that causes the greatest harm to us in the short term and in the long term. And here's the crazy stat that y'all might not be aware of. 2 out of 3 people in the United States, right here, right now, claim to be lonely. And what's even crazier is that along with this trend that we see developing within our lives, within our nation, that 66% of people find themselves as lonely, there is this shame and guilt attached to the reality that we struggle with connection that leads itself to this next stat. Only 12% of those people who find themselves lonely are willing to actually talk about it. Only 12% of people who are lonely are willing to admit that they are struggling with connection and that there is this craving in their life that isn't being met. But if those statistics show us anything, it's this. That if you're feeling alone, you're not alone in feeling alone. If you're struggling with loneliness, You aren't alone in that difficulty and in that struggle. And if you're feeling alone this morning, man, what I want you to hear is simply this. Your struggle with loneliness and seclusion in your life isn't because you're unlikable. It isn't because you're unlovable. It's not because you're unworthy. It's not because you're difficult or even annoying. Well, you probably are both of those things, but not any more than the rest of us. You see, the reality is you don't have to be ashamed and embarrassed about this struggle with connection, because connection isn't easy for any of us. And there's this reality that exists in every single one of our lives, even if you find yourself in the third, that would claim that you aren't lonely. The connection is something that doesn't come easy to all of us. Connection is something that we all struggle with. And relationship in our lives isn't quite how it's supposed to be. Every single one of us find ourselves on that exact same footing. And when push comes to shove, the biggest truth that I want you to understand as you struggle with connection and this concept of community with others is this, is that your loneliness is not an accusation of your unworthiness. And when you experience loneliness in your life, it's not an accusation of your unworthiness. When you experience loneliness, it's just a signal. It's our mind and body telling us that we have an unmet need for connection taking place in our lives. And that signal isn't a sign that something's wrong with you. In fact, here's the good news, y'all. That signal that you're experiencing is actually a sign that something is right with you. It's actually telling you that there is something you desperately need in your life that you aren't presently getting. That you need connection with other human beings, and that need isn't presently being met. It means you're still craving something, and I know this is hard to believe, y'all, something that's vital for human success in life on earth. For us to live a life of contentment and fulfillment, community is necessary. Josh shared with you last week as we kicked off this series, this reality that we know this to be true, that we can cling to this truth that we were created for community and connection all the way back to Adam and Eve. And when God looked at Adam standing there by himself, he declared, "It is not good." The pinnacle of his creation was not good. How could that be? Because he was alone. And man was never created to be alone. And yet this concept of loneliness that we all struggle with, it's not a you problem. It's not a me problem. It's a we problem. It's a product of the culture that we are all co-creating together. That within our lives and our culture right here in the United States, we find ourselves valuing things like convenience, privacy, comfort, and independence. And what I want you to know is that those things aren't bad things in and of itself. Those things can actually be healthy things manifested in each of our lives. But when we make those things the most important things, there are unintended consequences that come along with them. Unintended consequences like this. Right now within our country, 70% of leaders claim that they feel alone at the top. On top of that, you walk into this room and you would say, "Ben, I don't classify myself into a category of leading anything." Only 20% of moms in the United States believe that they can trust their circle with their faults and their difficulties. Only 20% of moms believe that they can trust their friends with their difficulties and their shortcomings in life. On top of that, men, we are 5 times lonelier than what we were in 1990. Right here in our country, men, we are 5 times lonelier than what we were about 30 years ago. On top of that, for the young people in the room, for the first time in recorded history, our young people are lonelier than the sick and the elderly. Hello. You see, loneliness is a greater epidemic than COVID. There is a problem that exists in our world and within our own individual lives. And yet, here's the good news, y'all. The good news is that while this problem exists in our lives and in our world, we as the local church have an incredible opportunity. We as Jesus followers have an incredible opportunity to model what community and relationship should look like. You see, many of you have heard me say from this very stage before that when it comes to the local church and our reach into culture, as hard as we may try, there is no way that we will ever be able to compete with the things that you encounter in our culture. That as high a production value as we have around here and striving for excellence in the things that we do, we will never be able to equal what you see on the big screen when you walk into a movie theater. We'll never be able to rival what you experience when you walk into a theater and see a Broadway production. We'll never be able to equal the things that you catch on the tube every single day when you flip to countless amount of channels. We won't be able to compete with those things within our culture. But if there's one thing within our culture that we should be able to do better than any other organization, than any other thing we will experience in our culture, that thing is relationship. That we as the local church should excel at relationship, should be great at carrying each other's burdens, walking alongside of each other, doing life with one another. Why? Because if we're really Jesus followers, this is what he was great at. This is what he set the table for, and everything that he taught in all lives and all stories while he was on this earth. That we should be great at loving each other. That we should be great at one anothering. That we should be great at entering into community even when it isn't comfortable. Y'all, the fact of the matter is this. I get that I'm talking to a bunch of crazy, busy people. You all are involved in a lot of things, and most likely a lot of really good things. There is no denying that. And shifting your life to prioritize things like community and relationship is like asking you to make a U-turn in the middle of the freeway. You're already traveling 70 miles an hour in the same direction as everybody else. And making this U-turn and beginning to do something different than everybody else seems just a little bit reckless and a little bit dangerous. And I'm not even sure, Ben, that it's worth it. I'm not sure that it's going to pay any dividends in my life and in my story. But what I want you to hear is this. What I want you to begin to grasp and believe is this truth. That the loneliness we are experiencing, the loneliness that you are experiencing in your life and in your story, it is not inevitable. It is not something that we simply have to accept and live with. This is not the way it has to be. In fact, could I convince you of this? That we are actually the anomaly. That the way in which we're doing life right now, coming out of this pandemic and the amount of loneliness that we're experiencing and the lack of connection and community that we're experiencing in our lives and in our stories is actually the anomaly. You see, I've had extended experiences across all sorts of cultures and in many countries. From places like Belize to Guatemala to Uganda. Krista, my wife, has had extended experiences in places like Botswana, Romania, Kenya, Uganda, Swaziland, and Guatemala as well. And in every single one of those experiences and the teams that we've taken and traveled alongside of, there is always a similar sentiment that comes from the people that travel and experience those people and those cultures. And it's this: it just doesn't make sense to me how those people could have so little and yet be so happy. How is that possible? And to just put this truth out on the table, let's not be confused. It's not because their life is easy. Their life is drastically more difficult than yours and I's. Their circumstances much more dire than probably anything we've ever experienced. And yet there is this one common denominator. This one common denominator that I so often miss, that we so often miss in our first world problems culture, that they have clung to, attached themselves to, for sheer survival. You see, what each of those places know is that community is necessary in order for them to survive. And so at every turn, they find themselves engaging in relationship, depending upon one another and the people who live on top of them. They do everything together. Make money together, share food together, share life together. There is no sense of loneliness in these cultures. And could it be that the joy and contentment and happiness that they experience, even in the midst of having nothing, stems from this place that they've solved the riddle on this thing called community? That they've overcome this thing that feels so uncomfortable to you and I, and because it's so uncomfortable, we resist it at every turn. And yet they've embraced it simply because they have to, and they've experienced the benefit of that in their life, a little bit physically, but a whole lot mentally. You see, we think living in close community with others is weird. But think about this. When you go back through time to every culture throughout history, the untested and unnatural way of doing life is the way we're doing it now in America. This is the only time in history in which life has been done like this, believing that we can do it on our own. We are the anomaly, and this thing called loneliness doesn't have to be inevitable. We can do better. We can do better at designing our lives around community and relationship. I can do better. You can do better. And maybe, just maybe, in doing better in this one area of our lives, we would begin to experience happier and healthier lives. We would begin to raise happier and healthier kids. That maybe, just maybe, if you walked into this room and you're a Jesus follower, that by rearranging our life and our priorities around things like community and relationship, we could begin to shine a light into a dark world. That maybe, just maybe, as Jesus followers, we have to do better. And for some of us, we're like, Ben, what do you mean we have to? I don't have to do anything. I'm just fine on my own. I'm just fine doing life like I'm doing life. And if those thoughts cross our mind, then maybe we're not really Jesus followers at all. Maybe we're simply admirers. Because if we really were Jesus followers, this would be a non-negotiable in our lives and our stories, no matter how uncomfortable or how difficult it may be. And you're like, Ben, why do you say that? Why do you step so far out on that limb to challenge that if we're not willing to embrace community in our lives, then maybe we're not really following Jesus? And the reason I stepped so far out on this limb is because this guy named Jesus, who we claim to be following, moments before he went to the cross, he made it clear. This is non-negotiable. That this, the way in which you do relationship and do life with each other, will actually be the way the world identifies you as my follower. In those moments, as he's sitting around a table, for the very last time with his disciples before he goes to the cross, he decides to extend a brand new command. A brand new command to these 11 remaining dudes sitting around with him. After he's washed their feet, before he's gone to the cross, and completely blows their mind with what he's about to say. This is the command that he offered them. It's the command that he's inviting you and I to as well. In John chapter 13, verse 34, Jesus says this. So now I'm giving you a new commandment. Love each other. Just as I have loved you, you should love each other. You see, this is the part where they didn't even fully grasp in the moment how far Jesus was talking and the way in which he would carry others' burdens and the way in which he would love other people, sacrifice for other people. In just a couple of short days, they would see this to its fullest display. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciple. This guy that we claim to be following, Jesus himself, made it clear that the way in which you do community, the way in which you love each other, the way in which you're willing to step outside of your comfort zone and carry each other's burdens will be the very marker for whether or not the world sees you as my followers. But the question that we address every single weekend is this. But how? How do I do this, Ben? How do I rearrange my life? How do I take a step outside of my comfort zone and engage in community and relationship for the sake of my physical and mental health and for the sake of the world around me? And the truth is that we must identify first, you will never find community. You will never magically discover community. Community in our lives and in our stories will never happen by accident. Community is something that you must build. It's something that you have to make the decision that you're going to go first. But how do I go first, Ben? And if you want to build community in your life, take the uncomfortable step of jumping into a small group. You take the difficult step of sacrificing an hour of your month or 2 hours of your month to jump into a serve team and to surround yourself with people who are all in the same mission, all driving in the same direction, and you begin to link arms with other people attempting to impact others' lives. You recognize needs around you, in your neighbors, in your neighborhood, in your city, in your church. You see people who are in need or who are going through difficult circumstances, and you step outside of your comfort zone to offer them assistance as they walk through their own difficulties in life. You have to step closer to others. And I get it, that's hard. But it isn't just that Jesus commanded us to do this. He also modeled it in his life here on earth. There's a moment, literally just a couple of hours after that passage that I read you, as Jesus takes his 11 remaining disciples with him from that upper room, they find themselves making their way to the garden. What the disciples don't know is that Jesus is entering into his last moments by their side. In just a couple of hours, the soldiers will walk into that garden. They'll take him away and arrest him and sentence him to a criminal's death, of which he hasn't earned. He'll hang there on the cross and breathe his last for me and for you. And yet here in these moments, Jesus invites his disciples to come alongside of him. And just a couple of months ago, if you'd have asked me what this moment, what this passage was all about, essentially the disciples find themselves knee to knee with Jesus as he's going through hurt and anguish and facing these last moments where he's about to walk through unbearable pain and separation from his heavenly Father. And what do the disciples do? They fall asleep. They can't even stay awake. They can't even pray by his side. If you have asked me, Ben, what was the point of this moment? What's the underlying truth in this passage? I'd have said, well, it's obvious that here are these disciples, much like you and I, stuck in their selfishness and their self-centeredness, that in this important moment, they couldn't even follow Jesus enough to stay awake. But I've got better news. As daunting as that sounds, in this moment, there is this missed truth of Jesus putting on display something so incredible, something so pivotal, not just for his story, but for yours and mine as well. Matthew chapter 26, we find this moment taking place. Then Jesus went with them to the olive grove called Gethsemane. And he said, sit here while I go over there to pray. He took Peter and Zebedee's two sons, James and John, and he became anguished and distressed. And then this is so good, y'all. This is it. This is where the rubber meets the road. This is where it turns from just a command to watch how I do it. He told them, my soul is crushed with grief to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. He invites his inner circle, these three dudes, to come alongside of him. And then what Jesus does in these next moments is so ridiculously powerful. Jesus models authenticity and vulnerability. My soul is crushed. I'm anguished to the point of death in this moment. He shares this with these three dudes, and he asks them to sit side by side with him as he's going through the most difficult moments of his time here on earth. God himself modeled how to do community and what was healthy for our lives, even when it's uncomfortable. See, authenticity and vulnerability is not a weakness. It's not a flaw. It's not weird. It's a part of God's design for us as humanity, for us to have people in our lives who we can be authentic and vulnerable with. And I'm just going to go the last 10%, y'all. Give me some grace. We were designed to have other people in our lives that we can be authentic and vulnerable with outside of just our spouse. Y'all okay? I just want to let that settle for a second. That if we want to live according to God's design for our lives, we need to have community in our lives. We need to be a part of a group of people in which we are doing life with, in which we are sharing burdens with. You see, it reminds me, just a few months ago, many of you know that Krista and I, we had an opportunity to travel and do a vision trip to Uganda. From that vision trip sort of spurred this brand new, our second here at Core CarePoint that we're partnering with and walking alongside of as they change a community halfway around the world. And yet as we were on this trip and we traveled across the Atlantic Ocean, there's a 7-hour time difference between here in Ohio to where we were in Uganda. They were 7 hours effectively ahead of us. And so what that means is that when it was noon in Uganda, it was 5 a.m. right here stateside. And I remember this. This is one of those minor memories, obviously not the most important part of the trip. But as we were there in Uganda, it was the very first weekend of the NFL season, the very first weekend of fantasy football. And that afternoon, the 4 o'clock games were just kicking off, and there was some bantering taking place between guys in my fantasy football league. And they were going back and forth, and my quarterback got injured that I had drafted right there the very first week. And yet there I was, it was the middle of the night where we were in Uganda. And there was all of these things happening, all of this conversation, because for them it was the middle of the day. You see, when it comes to our lives here on earth and the circumstances we walk through, this thing called community is so vital because that same thing is true in every single one of our lives and in every single one of our circumstances. That sometimes as we walk through the darkest of night, we need people walking beside us who are walking through their day where it's light out and they're on their mountaintop and things aren't so bad. Why? Because as Jesus followers, we have an opportunity, a responsibility. We are being called to be hope dealers. With one another, we are called to be lending, giving, and receiving hope in relationship with one another. And yet hope can't be dealt in isolation, y'all. We are called to be in a place where we have community around us that when we can't stand on our own because it's so dark, that they help lift us up. They're willing to walk arm in arm with us and walk through life's most dire circumstances alongside of us. And in turn, when they pass through those same moments, we find ourselves there for them as well. That's how life as Jesus followers is supposed to be done. It happens through community. It happens through close proximity. It happens through relationship. Relationship that won't be found or accidentally discovered. Relationship that must be built. Relationship that calls you out of your comfort zone for the sake of your own life and your own future. See, loneliness, it's not inevitable. But in order for us to buck the trend, we must reshuffle our priorities. It's time for us to take the difficult step of being committed to doing better. We can do better. Would you pray with me? Heavenly Father, what blows my mind is that when you came and you put on flesh and you stepped onto the pages of history, you became a God. A God unlike any other faith, unlike any other religion, who became one of us to not just command us what to do, but to walk in our shoes, to show us how to do life, to show us how to do relationship, to show us how to love one another. God, my prayer for myself, my prayer for every single one of us is simply this: give us the courage. Follow your example. Give us the courage to jump in and to go first when it's uncomfortable. Give us the courage to say yes to relationship and community in our lives if we don't presently have that. And within that community and that relationship, give us the courage to go first in things like authenticity and vulnerability. Whether we acknowledge it or not, God, you created us to need that in our lives. And so may we be courageous enough to take that step outside of our comfort zone. It's in your name that we pray. Amen.